And immediately, like the first week that I applied, I had 2 rejections, and that was really painful. They said, no, no, thank you.
Like day one of acceptance, I was praying I would hear at least something on that day so I can either start planning to rethink how I'm going to improve my application again or a sigh of relief for Christmas, you know? Tears were rolling down my face.
Welcome to another episode of Tell Us More. And thank you for joining us. Here are your co-hosts.
I'm Jonathan Diamond.
And I'm Kenan Priest.
We're pre-dental students, and we're passionate about sitting down to hear the stories that made people who they are.
This podcast started out as an idea to interview the older generation and preserve their voice and memories for their families.
We saw the wisdom that they gained from living through tough challenges, and we think that examples of grit and integrity deserve to be shared.
We also wanted to connect with dentists to learn about the decisions that guided them through their professional journey.
Hearing their experiences is bound to open up opportunities for other pre-dental students like us.
We hope you enjoy joining us as we ask them to tell us more. Welcome back, everybody, to our next episode of the Tell Us More podcast with your hosts, Kenan Priest and Jonathan Diamond. We've got kind of an exciting thing to share with you today, some exciting news. Both Jonathan and myself have very recently been accepted to dental school. So we've kind of made it through this whole difficult process of navigating applications and an entrance to dental school. And so now we wanted to take the opportunity to sit down together and create a podcast episode where we talk about our journey, our experience on our way to dental school. And hopefully this helps some of the pre-dental students and other dental candidates who are kind of in the same shoes that we were, which is getting ready, applying, and trying to navigate all of the difficult things that entails. So without further ado, let's get into it. I'm going to go ahead and have Jonathan tell us his experience, and I'll be interjecting here and there to ask some questions as we go, but we hope you enjoy as we tell you more.
Perfect. Thanks, Kenan. Yeah, for sure. It's been honestly a crazy journey thus far. As you know, this was my second time applying to dental school, and man, it's been a journey for sure. So thus being said, since this is my second time, I'll start from the beginning. I actually applied back in, let's see, 20, was it 22? I think that's when it was. So I applied then, and I had one interview. And man, when I received the interview for West Virginia, I was ecstatic. I was super excited because from that point, it was probably in, I want to say it was like October when I received the interview. And so it was pretty late into the sending out interviews in the process. And being a student that attended pre-dental society at our college, I heard everyone else receiving their interviews and already had their interviews. And so I was just like pretty down on myself, to be honest. I was like, man, why am I not getting any interviews? I felt like I was a decent applicant. I knew my dental admission test was not the highest, but I felt like it was somewhat competitive. But anyways, I received that interview, and since it was still 2021 type, yeah, I think it was during the end of 2021, because that's when it was still the height of like people only doing interviews online. There's a few schools that would do it in person, like Arizona, I heard. But West Virginia, I had my interview, and then honestly, it was just a big waiting game. So I had to wait till December 1st. That's when it was during that time. Now it's like December 15th, and who knows? Well, they'll probably change the date again in the future for when everyone can officially start hearing. But man, it was daunting. I hear all my friends getting in, getting accepted to their like a couple of schools, not just one, but like a couple. And I was like, man, if I can just get this one so I can get started, that would be awesome. But as I waited and waited, all of a sudden I got a rejection letter from West Virginia. And I honestly can't remember what month that was. I'd have to look it up again, but it was probably, I don't know, maybe February or the month after that when I actually had the rejection letter. And man, that was my only hope. And in 2022 was when I graduated, and so my plan was to start school right after I finished my spring semester up at BYU Idaho. And so I kind of was lost. I was like, man, now I'm graduating. I'm married. What am I going to do? So I had to buckle down and kind of just think, what were my next steps? So I actually reached out to West Virginia and asked, hey, can I get some feedback on my interview? And it was kind of a letdown, to be honest, with that school. I was kind of expecting them to give me like an actual feedback. I only got to talk to the admission person, and she said, yeah, how do you feel as an interviewer, how you did? And I was like, okay, I'm asking you like a personal question about, hey, what did you think me as an interviewer?
Like, of course,
like,
I felt
like
good
they
about
had
it.
Any notes or whatever that you can. Yeah. So it's kind of crazy to get that, and kind of made me mad. I was like, well, I feel like I'm a decent interviewer. I've practiced. And they're like, okay, so, well, and she was like, yeah, well, if you felt like you were good, it was probably a good interview then. I was like, well, apparently it wasn't, because I didn't get into your dental school. So probably looked like I had fumes coming out of my head when I was talking over the phone. But I don't know. From that conversation, I didn't get anywhere, unfortunately. So I kind of just reassessed what I was lacking in my application. And for sure, it was the DAT. On that test, I got a 17 as my academic average. And honestly, it's not like the best score out there, but I've definitely had some people I knew that got into dental school with that score. And so that's why I felt confident enough to apply with that score. But now it's probably like the average. Wouldn't you say around like 20 is the average?
Depending on the school, yeah, there's all kinds of statistics out there, but there's definitely programs that are more DAT focused and some that are less DAT focused. But the averages have been increasing year over year as study resources improve for students and as the candidate pool also increases. The schools are being more selective with the scores that they want to take for interviews. So yeah, you're right.
So that was like the big assessment I made. So after I graduated college, I moved out with my wife to California and pretty much just spent, I don't know, probably 5 months just studying the DAT as like pretty much a full-time job and while I was shadowing. So I really wanted to put my all into the test so that, like, for sure, because like they really only want you to retake the test 3 times. If you take it more than that, they kind of look down on those applicants just because they probably don't have a lot of faith in them to be able to do too well in school if they're going to be retaking the test that many times. But so I was like, the second time has to be the one. So took the 5-6 months. It was probably 5 months of studying nonstop, 40 hours, probably, or even more a week. And man, I was happy to receive an academic average of 20. I was super excited for that score. I wasn't too happy about my bio score, if I'm being honest. I was hoping I'd increase. That was probably the one that was hurting me, was my biology score, because I got a 15 on that, which is, most schools aren't really looking for people who got 15. So, but I did that. And then the other thing that helped me increase was my wife and I had the opportunity to go live in the Dominican Republic with the international language program. So it's just a humanitarian program that we went out and taught English for 4 or 5 months out in the Dominican Republic. So we lived in their village with the people and kids there. And it was such a cool experience, apart from being able to just meet all the different types of people and just be humbled to live and pretty much like eat like them, live like them. And some retrospects, like there's definitely, we definitely had a little better living, but no hot water. So definitely had to get used to living with cold water, which was kind of crazy. But like living there in the DR, you actually enjoy getting a cold shower because it's pretty hot in the summertime. So apart from that, after I did that and did tons of shadowing hours once I got back, sent in my applications, I applied to, I want to say probably, I think it was 19 or 20. I would have to double check on that. 19 or 20 different schools, because I really wanted to put my application out there. And how many schools did you do, Kenan, that you applied for?
I I did 18. So yeah, same, very similar. A lot of schools try to cast a very wide net. So I totally understand that. That's probably a wise move.
So pretty similar what I did the last time. The first time I applied, I did 20. And unfortunately, with these applications, they're not cheap. They definitely take a lot of money. And I don't really understand why some of the applications cost as much as they do. But with all the applications, I was super happy to receive four interviews. And so definitely a huge increase from the first time. So I was ecstatic for sure. And so the four schools that I had interviews at, the first one I was at was with Midwestern Arizona. The second one was AT Still Arizona. And so it was actually cool. I was able to knock those two out in the same week. Just I was able to schedule both of those interviews the same week, so I didn't have to go back and travel twice. So I was able to save some money in that and then just stay with some friends there, so I didn't even have to pay for travel or driving around, or added to pay for living space. So that's a huge plus. So like, if you're looking out there to try to go interviews, try to reach out to people if you don't have friends there, or find ways to save money in that sort of way. But the other two interviews I had at University of Minnesota, that's where I actually grew up the majority of my life, and so that was pretty cool to finally go back there. It was probably, I think the last time I was there, it was probably 10 years ago in Minnesota, and so super excited to go back and visit some people and see Minnesota again. And I was able to bring my wife with me, so she was able to see how I grew up. And then the other interview I had was University of New England. Oh, sorry. And I actually had five. I forgot. Man, I forgot. I had a fifth interview, and that was with Western University here in California, just in Pomona. And that was my last interview that I had. And that was pretty exciting to have five interviews. The New England one was the only one that was online. It was kind of a weird interview, to be honest. I don't know if... Did you apply to that school? I can't remember.
You said New England?
University of New England.
I did. I did apply.
Okay.
But I did. Did you, by chance, interview, though?
Okay. It was very interesting how they did their interview process. So sort of how, since you'll be going to Roseman, you know how they had you do a online little interview before you actually had your official interview?
Uh-huh.
So their interview was literally just like that online one. You didn't talk to anyone for the interview. It was all just like pre-recorded, like people from the school asking their questions, and that was it. So it was a very interesting experience compared to all the other interviews I had. Even when I did the West Virginia, it was over Zoom. So like, I was still able to interact and actually show who I am, comparatively to just like answering a question to a camera. So
that would be so trippy, I feel.
Yeah, it was weird. And I heard from people when I was at the interviews in person, because some people were talking about their interviews with New England, and they said, hey, did you like go in person or anything like that? And they're like, no, I just had it with that. And I actually had a friend that interviewed with them and was actually accepted with that school. But he was like, I don't feel good about this school. Not even like talking to anyone that was there. So it gave him a sour taste. So, but fast forward to acceptance. I know this is a long path, but like fast forward to day one of acceptance. I was praying I would hear at least something on that day, so I can either start planning to try to rethink how I'm going to improve my application again, or just have a relief, a sigh of relief for Christmas, you know? And coming on December 15th at 7 a.m., a guy from Midwestern Arizona called. I looked at my phone. I was like, man, who's calling me this early? And I was like, oh, it's Midwestern. What the? And so I answered, and I was just like, answer the phone. And I was like, I knew it was going to be an acceptance because they only call you if they're accepting you into their school. They're not going to call you if they're going to reject you. So I was just so happy. The guy was super, super nice. He was like, yeah, you're accepted. And then he's like, yeah, I've been calling some people this morning. He's like, how do you feel? I was like, I'm super excited. He's like, that's good. He's like, I get mixed emotions when I get to call people. So he's like, yeah, here's all the information and we'll send you the email and everything. And so literally right after I hung up the phone, man, tears were rolling down my face because I just was like, man, I made it. I made it into dental school. There's definitely a long path after this, like in dental school and everything. But like, man, making it to dental school nowadays is extremely hard because there's not as many schools, not as many chairs comparably to how many students are applying now. So, but yeah, so made into that school. I'm trying to think of how my other schools went that I've interviewed with. I haven't heard anything back from Western University yet. They haven't said anything, which is kind of odd since it's in March right now. And then AT still, that same day I got put on the wait list. And then University of Minnesota, probably, I think it was last month, they finally got back to me and sent a rejection. And then I'm trying to think, oh yeah, and then University of New England, they asked if I wanted to be on their wait list. And I was like, you know, I'm already accepted into like one of my top two schools, so I don't care to really be on the wait list for that. So I didn't go on the wait list for that. And then recently, I think it was like 2 weeks ago, I got an email from West Virginia. Out of all the schools, they're like, hey, we want to give you our secondary application now. And I was like, oh, that's kind of odd to send your secondary now after all this time. And so it kind of just shows that I'm kind of on the backlist, but at the same time, I figured like, hey, if they're sending this, most likely they would send me an interview, like would want me to interview, but I didn't care too much to go out there just because I'm pretty dead set on Midwestern or AT still. And so I was like, I'm not going to use more money, even though it would be really cool to go out and see West Virginia's campus after like doing the Zoom interview, because they actually have really cool things there. They have like a whole building dedicated to all the new technology every single year, all the like newest and best things that you get to try your fourth year. So that's a very cool aspect of West Virginia if you ever think about going there. So, but yeah, that's kind of my whole ride of applying. Tons of ups and downs for sure. I felt like a lot more downs, but you know, we're going up now.
There you go. Awesome. Jonathan, thank you for sharing. I really love what you shared, especially about your, you know, sharing how it was a lot of ups and downs. I think that that's probably the most accurate way that you could describe the application process, is it is a roller coaster. But you did it, man. You're headed to Arizona. You're going to be a dentist, man. That's just, it's exciting to see. So very, very cool.
Thank you. And dude, I'm ready to hear about your little journey that you've had. I know I kind of skipped out on like the beginning before my first application and why I even wanted to be a dentist, but I'm curious of what brought you to being a wannabe a dentist a little, and then just like your whole journey, because like, I know you did exercise physiology as your major. That's why I did as mine too. I'd be very curious to see like what brought you to go the exercise phys major instead of just like a biomed, and then like your journey into your application.
Yeah, I'd love to share that. So I guess a little bit about myself. I did grow up in Arizona, but like Jonathan said, we did attend the same university for undergrad, and that was in Rexburg, Idaho at BYU Idaho. And we actually both coincidentally graduated the same semester from the same department with a Bachelor of Science in exercise physiology. And typically, the pre-dental students that we would see, our classmates at BYU Idaho, they in particular would do a biomedical science degree that was kind of tailored for pre-med, pre-dental students, meaning it had all the prerequisite courses and it was very science heavy and it was geared really towards getting those students into professional programs. And when I first started school, they hadn't quite developed that degree, that major yet. So it wasn't available at the time. And I kind of had this vague idea in the back of my mind that maybe I should look at dentistry, but I also loved exercise and sports. And so as I sat down with an academic counselor to consider options, what I found was that the degree for exercise physiology satisfied a lot of the same prereqs that you needed to enter and apply to dental school. And so I kind of continued in that route. And then by the time the school had finished their degree for biomedical sciences, I didn't really have any desire to switch because I love what I was doing in exercise physiology. I thought it was fascinating and super interesting, you know, the idea that exercise can be a medicine for the body. And so I continued with what I was doing. And then there were a few prerequisite courses that didn't fit in to the degree itself. And I took those as elective classes. But by the time I was done with school, I had fulfilled most of the prereqs that all the schools were looking for, with the exception of I never took microbiology. And so when I applied to schools, I found that there were a lot of programs that wanted to see microbiology. And so after the fact, I went back and took microbiology, number one, to satisfy that prerequisite for those schools that wanted to see it. And number two, to boost my GPA a little bit and show these schools that I was still involved in school. And the reason I bring that up is because a lot of pre-dental students, you know, they kind of cruise through school really fast. We talk about like traditional versus non-traditional applicants. And a traditional applicant will go to high school, maybe take a year off, but most likely just go straight through school. Maybe they have some family support for financing tuition. Maybe they do student loans or there's some other situation. But a lot of students will go straight through and they'll graduate with their bachelor's at 21, 22. 23. I'm considered a less traditional applicant because I graduated at 27. And when I graduated, I was married and had a young daughter. So, after, you know, graduating and applying, I'm much more, I guess, advanced in age than some of the other young candidates that are, you know, they've got fresh legs, finishing their degree really fast. So, but with that, you know, because I'm a non-traditional applicant, I spent a lot of time during my school years taking time away from classes to work, to provide for myself and then my growing small family. So I didn't have the time to give the full attention to classes and get stellar. And that was a huge weak point in my application. Something that if I could go back and do it differently, man, just get those good grades. Just put in the time because it's that is hard to recover from. And you know, if I can, at risk of oversharing, I guess, when you apply, you enter in your transcripts manually and you have your official transcripts from your school. And obviously, at this point, you've taken the prerequisites for your degree. So the school has verified that you've finished everything and you have a sufficient GPA to graduate. But that does not mean you have necessarily the grades needed to apply to dental school or med school or whatever. And in my case, chemistry was so, so difficult. I had to retake a couple of the classes and we had some like personal things going on that kind of, facilitated that having to happen. But the point is I had some very bad grades in some of my science core prereqs, and then I had to go back and retake them. And because our university's transcripts showed our official grade as the higher of the two grades, I thought, man, I'm good. Like this is going to be smooth sailing. It's okay. No, turns out when you do your applications, ADSAS, which is the centralized dental school application through ADEA, they take an average of all of your classes. So if you've retaken the course, let's say you went from a D to a B and it was a 3-credit class, instead of getting credit for a 3-credit class at a B level, they give you 6 credits worth at a C level, which is the average. So it is so hard to come back from that. All I'm saying is pre-dental candidates, seriously, work on your grades, do what you can, because I had a very non-traditional route and a very low GPA. I calculated everything. I mean, my grade point average dropped quite a substantial amount. And that was a total gut punch to me because I was really stressing about whether it was enough. But along with that, kind of like Jonathan said, I took the DAT after I graduated. I dedicated a few months' time to just studying for the DAT. I wasn't working at the time. I was doing a little bit of shadowing, but for the most part, It was like 10-hour plus days of just cranking out studying for this DAT. And I was able to pull off a pretty decent score. I took the DAT and I scored with a 22 academic average, and none of my subsections were under 19, which I think was really, really important because I had such bad grades in my science classes. So I think this kind of proved to some of these schools that, yes, this person had a lot going on when they were in their undergrad, but they can still do hard science classes and master the material. But again, reemphasize.
I think Kenan's a lot more humble here than he's speaking, because like a 22 is an amazing academic average, because as we talked at the beginning, like academic average right now for most students getting in is about a 20. And so getting two more points, like, because there's only a total of 30 points for the whole score. So getting two more points is crazy. Even getting a 25, which we know personally, one person who got a 25 on their DAT, and like the percent of people that can get that high is like 1%, I want to say.
Yeah, the test, the DAT, for those that don't know, is really kind of interesting. It's a standardized test, so you make it a different version, but you're only graded against that version of the test. And it's not like a percentage of how many questions you got right. They basically compare the number of questions you got right to the difficulty of the exam and give you a standardized calculated score. And then the averages are kind of like a bell curve, like you would expect with any exam. And so even 1 point increase, like from a, let's say like a 24 to a 25, I mean, that's a 1 point increase, but we're talking like a huge jump on the bell curve that you'll have less candidates do that. So I think it really was like a saving grace because I had such a low GPA. And I'll talk about that also in a second here. But when I was getting ready to apply, I spent a lot of time and hours scouring the internet and looking at all different kinds of resources from the ADEA about which schools to apply to. Because I wanted schools that, number one, were going to be a good fit academically, that would give me the ability to become a proficient dentist. Because there are some schools that Jonathan could probably vouch for are not regarded as great dental schools, comparatively at least, right?
Yeah. It's interesting that you bring that up, because that's something that I didn't really take into account my first time doing my application. I applied to probably like half of them were probably schools that there's no way I could have made it, like just because of what they were asking for, like grade wise and stuff, or like even on the DAT. I just threw them out there thinking, oh yeah, they might take me into account. And I learned, just like you were saying, like how important it is to really evaluate your scores and press it up against like what they're asking for. Like some schools will definitely go for those lower scores because they kind of have to. They kind of have to just to average out their students. But like for sure, try to, because the applications are expensive, so you want to put your money towards what's going to actually give you the best chance.
Very, very true. So when I was going through my list of schools, I wanted to find schools that, number one, I felt like I could do well as a dentist having graduated from there. And then number two, like Jonathan said, are my stats anywhere near their range? Like, could I fit in with there? And you can find statistics online for what their reported like 5th and 95th percentile candidates are. And that's like obviously the extreme ends of the bell curve. So if you're somewhere in the middle, maybe you have a good chance, but if you're under that 5th percentile, odds are not in your favor. So I really went through the school list and I made my own spreadsheets about, I don't know if you can see that. Like you can see the schools here. I applied to 18 of them. I've got their state location, their total tuition for the 4 years of their program. I've got an estimated cost of living for the area, number of students per chair in their clinic, whether they have a supplemental. If there is a supplemental application, what the link is to that, or if they're going to email it to you, notes like that, how much it's going to cost for their application, their average DAT scores, their average GPA, you know, scores there. And then I have a bunch of other miscellaneous notes, like some of these schools allow you to select which letters of recommendation you want to send. So I notated which letters I would send to which school, depending on what I thought was the best fit. To even have their grading system. Is it letter grades ranked or is it pass fail? Because that makes a difference in how you're going to study. Their out of state seats over their total number of seats. Meaning if I'm not from California and I applied to a California school, are they going to take me or are they just going to throw me in the trash? Does the school have specialty programs? because oftentimes schools that have specialties, maybe they'll save some of their difficult cases in clinic for the specialty residency students. And if you're, you know, at a school that doesn't have the specialties, maybe you'll have some more varied experience. There's kind of some conflicting opinions out there on that, but but I looked at all of these things. And so I created my list of 18 schools, and then I applied as soon as I possibly could. And immediately, like the first week that I applied, I had two rejections, and that was really painful. And one of them was actually from Midwestern AZ. And they rejected me before even asking for a secondary. So I hadn't even written them a check. And they said, no, no, thank you. Because my BBCP average, which is your biology, biochemistry, chemistry, physics average GPA, was too low. It was a 2.98 for those core sciences. And they wanted to see a 3 and above for those. And I was just like, I was crushed because wanted to go to Midwestern. And then shortly after, AT Still did the same thing. They sent me an email and said, no, thank you for this reason. So I appreciated their honest feedback, but it made me nervous.
Yeah, for sure. It's tough because you're definitely like super shy of that point average too.
Yeah. Well, yeah, really close. But, you know, again, if you don't make it, you don't make it, you know? So,
yeah.
But shortly after, I had submitted all my supplemental applications as soon as they came in from the schools. Because you have in the application process, your primaries, which are sent through a centralized portal. And then you have your secondaries, which the school may request you to pay their own, you know, application fees on top of the original fees and answer a few more supplemental questions. And then if they like those two aspects, then they'll go towards their interview, which is online for some, in person for some, or maybe you have a hybrid where they do both. And then after your interview, like Jonathan shared, December is typically the time of year that they'll send out their very first round picks for their students who are accepted. And then after December, it's just rolling admissions. So you may hear a yes or a no anytime. But that's how the application process works. I was denied by the two schools. And then I had three schools contact me and say, hey, we want to do an interview. And I was like, dude, three interviews in the summer? Like, we're golden, man. Like, this is good. We're kind of first in line. So I interviewed at Roseman University in Utah. And then the very next week, I interviewed at Iowa in Iowa City. And then the week after that, I interviewed at Indiana virtually. Theirs was an online interview. And my experience with those three schools. Yeah. My experience with those three schools were Roseman was really impressive to me because it's a 3-year advanced program as opposed to the traditional 4. I really like that. I really like that the facilities are really well maintained and they're like super data driven. And they made a huge emphasis about collaboration instead of competition when you're a dental student, which to me, I love because I'm kind of a people person, you know? So that was automatically a green flag for me that I was like, I would have no problem going to school here. And then we went to Iowa. And Iowa is a very different school. They're kind of a very traditional school, but I still love what they had to say. And, you know, I was kind of all in there as well. And, you know, I was very excited about that option. And Indiana was the one that I was like, okay, it's a dental school. I'd still be happy, but I know less about it. Kind of like Jonathan was saying about his experience with some of the schools back east that he hadn't visited in person. It's just hard to get a feel, you know, but I had those interviews and then I waited, you know, for the rest of fall towards December. And you're kind of in that weird radio silence mode where you're trying to decide, okay, how do I feel about, do I have a good chance? The interviews, I felt like went okay. So December 15th, you know, decision day comes around and you're staying up late. You're watching for emails and phone calls and nothing. And I'm watching on these discussion boards online to see, had these schools reached out and people are chiming in. Yeah, I've got my acceptance. And I'm like crushed, you know, and then it's the day of the 15th now, you know, some schools start like at midnight, some are throughout the day. And I just get rejection after rejection from all of these other schools that I've given secondaries to. And I'm just like getting my shins kicked in, man. and then here come my three schools that I've interviewed at. Here come Roseman, Iowa, and Indiana. And they all tell me, congratulations, you've been waitlisted. And I'm like, no. I don't want a waitlist, you know, don't give me something to hang on to. Like just either put me out of my misery, tell me I need to reapply or like, tell me yes, you know? but I was waitlisted all of them, which kind of told me, okay, my interviews were probably okay, but they didn't like something about my application. There's something about me that says this might be a risky candidate. And I knew what that was. Like, it was the GPA. I mean, that was the weak point. I had thousands of service hours. I had a lot of like work experience, not dental related, but a lot of work experience log. I had some pretty solid letters of recommendation. My personal statement, which you write about yourself, I felt like was really, you know, personal. It was a personal statement. And so for me, I was like, okay, GPA, that's my weak spot. And so then immediately I was like, I need to write letters to these schools and tell them, hey, I know that my weak point is my GPA. I want to tell you what I'm doing to make that better. And I want to let you know that I'm all in and committed into becoming a student at your school. And in dentistry, as a pre-dental student, there's two categories of like academic update letters you can write. One would be letter of interest, where you basically tell the school, hey, I'm not going anywhere. I'm still really interested in your program. Please consider me. The other is a letter of intent. And if you use any kind of lingo where you're saying the verbiage intent, I will attend, something like that, then, you know, ethically speaking, you want to just tell that to one school where you're saying, you're my one, you're my only, you know, like nobody else matters. I'm coming to you, you know. And so I sent out one letter of intent, two letters of interest to these schools. And I heard back in just a couple of days, I guess it was after I sent these letters, and was accepted off the waitlist to Roseman University, Utah. And, you know, that to me was just like the biggest weight had lifted off of my shoulders, you know, because as a young dad, especially, you know, you feel it's heavy to provide for your family and you want to make sure that they're taken care of. And I'm watching my daughter grow up. She's getting older and she's going to turn 2 in May. And it's like, you want her to make sure that she has the world to look up to, you know? And I didn't want to have to go back to school for a master's to strengthen the application. I wanted to move on with life. And so to have that come, you know, Jonathan echoed that it was kind of an answer to his prayers. 100%. I can put my stamp of approval on that, you know, for any of our pre-dental listeners that are watching this and, you know, maybe they're spiritual, maybe they're religious. I don't think it can hurt to pray, you know, I really don't. And I kind of have a firm belief that that's what helped me to get off of those wait lists, because it was a daily thing that we were just pouring out our hearts and asking to be let into these schools. And so we heard from Roseman and we went full in. We put down our deposit, went house hunting in the area to find a place where we could live. We got a lease on an apartment, started, so we're ready to kind of rock and roll with school. And we're excited, you know, we're really excited. Since December, we've heard rejections from pretty much all of the other schools. There's a couple that are still deliberating, plus the two wait lists that we're still on. But at this point, we're really, really solid at going to Roseman, and we feel good about that. So it does just take one acceptance to get in, and you're going to become a dentist, whether that's DDS, DMD, doesn't matter. But my overall advice, apply wisely to which schools you want to go to. If you wouldn't actually go there, don't even waste the money, because like Jonathan said, it's really expensive. Number two, make sure your stats fit. Number three, definitely make sure that it's a school that your family, if you have a family, be comfortable at, that yourself, you know, would be comfortable at. And if you can satisfy those couple of things on a checklist, then probably it's a good school to apply to. Trying to think, Jonathan, other miscellaneous things to share, like some little hacks and tips and tricks?
I do have a quick question. Was Roseman your letter of intent or your letter of interest?
So I was actually kind of strategically avoiding using any of those verbiages in my letters because I wasn't sure which school I wanted to be like, no, you know. But basically what I wrote to them in my letter was, when I visited your campus, I mean, everything about your campus felt like it clicked for me. And Roseman is in the Rocky Mountains in Utah. So I even mentioned that to me kind of felt like an analogy for my own experience, is that here I am as a pre-dental student crawling, trying to get to the top peak of this mountain. And then here I am, I finally make it to your interview day and I look outside your window and here I am looking at the Rocky Mountains, you know, snow-covered peaks as I'm interviewing at your school. And what better confirmation that this is where I belong. You know, your student staff was welcoming, your faculty was professional, You know, and so I kind of echoed those things. And whoever read that letter, I don't know if that's what made the difference. Maybe they would have reached out to us anyways, you know, but I kind of feel like maybe that letter had something with them getting back. So that's a good question.
I think it's a very interesting like thing with writing back to schools after like your interviews or during that whole time. Cause there's definitely like probably 50% of the schools that tell you, whatever you do, don't email us. If you email us, we will take you off our application list. And
Roseman,
so like,
it's kind of like that, actually. They
really, I didn't know that.
Yeah. In their interview day, they told us essentially, you know, if you have something to update us on, by all means, update us, but don't bug us. Don't ask where you are in terms of your admission standing. Like if you're on the wait list, don't be like, hey, am I number 2? Am I number 20? Where am I at? And so, you know, I kind of thought about it like, is it going to help me or hurt me if I send this letter? And I tried to really make it not just, you know, a letter stating that I'm ready to come to your program, but also a letter of, here's what I've been doing to work on myself since that time and address my weak points. And here's why we're a match made in heaven. You know what I'm saying? So,
yeah.
it's like you're dating these schools. So,
yeah. But yeah, for sure. That was like one thing I was kind of scared to do because of the amount of schools that told me don't send any emails. Besides, like, there is even, I think there was maybe one school that told us don't even send them a thank you letter just because they didn't want an influx of like random emails to them because they're already dealing with so much. So that was kind of interesting. But like, for sure, send out thank you emails, and that the schools will tell you if that's okay or not and like where to send it. So at least for my experience at the schools I went to, they told us if you could send them or not.
Yeah. A couple of their like little tips and things that I can remember from our whole application experience. If you apply for it early enough in the year, the ADEA does provide a certain number of application fee waivers, and it doesn't make it free to apply, but they basically pay for your first, I think it's like the first 4 programs that you want to submit an application to. So it comes out to be like $600 or so. And so if you apply early enough for that and you can prove that you have financial need, like you're married, you have a small family, limited income, whatever that is, Pell Grants, then they may give you that fee waiver. The DAT is also pretty expensive, but you can get a partial DAT fee waiver too. That's 50% off of your exam. And that's super helpful because you'll save several hundred dollars that way as well. Yeah, the schools are expensive. Look at the schools you want to apply to. Like, I'd say the average is probably around $60 to $70 for your supplemental fees. But I saw one school that was $150, and that was a really painful supplemental to pay. So that's really, you got to think about those things too. And then, like Jonathan said too, cost of travel to interviews, the whole process is kind of taxing and expensive, but it's kind of part of the game you play.
Yeah. I was actually pulling up a thing because I actually decided to keep track of like pretty well of, where is it? Of like everything I paid for. Let me see what it came out to. I can find.
I've got that same number here on my spreadsheet, and it's a big one.
What did yours come out to be?
Well, this is, again, with those fee waivers and with doing everything pretty much as cheap as possible, it came out to $4,700 and just a little bit over that. So yeah, about $4,700.
Mine came out to $4,000, I think.
Pretty similar numbers.
Yeah, pretty similar. I was going to input like I forgot to get around to it, but I was going to input like the travel costs and stay and everything for the couple interviewed just because it's kind of cool to like see, but also just like budgeting wise, it's nice to have, especially for those like pre-dental students. You're going to be spending at least $5,000, I'd say, on average. If you're going for the bigger range of schools, you'll spend anywhere from $4,000 to $5,000.
Well, and so kind of like we talked about too, we applied to 18 and 20-ish schools, you know, respectively.
Yeah.
And I'd say on average, students will apply to about 10 to 12 programs. If you have very competitive numbers, maybe less would be okay. But if you have any kind of like a weak part of your application, in my opinion, it's worth it to apply to more schools and kind of bite the bullet there cost-wise, because it may save you a year's time and an additional year of reapplying with extra fees and things. if it's what gets you into school. So something to consider.
Yeah. And honestly, I think the biggest tip or like thing that helped me with applications was definitely being a part of the pre-dental society at our school. I don't know how all other pre-dental societies are, but at least at the BYU Idaho pre-dental society, it really set you up for success. Like Ken and I both were a part of the presidency, so we actually got to plan and actually do activities that's going to help you start dental school, apply for dental school, and understand all that stuff. And so, well, one thing that even came from being part of that pre-dental society, which a lot of people don't know, is that there's the ADA ASDA's guide to getting into dental school. It's called Getting Into Dental School. I'll just share my screen real quick, but it's this book right here, Getting Into Dental School, is like the little guide for every single school that's like, at least that's been around for a while. Like the newer schools that just barely came out aren't going to be on here. But this was like a huge guide for...
That's your Bible right there.
Yeah. For every single school, where's a better... There you go. For example, like the University of Iowa. There you go. The school that Ken applied to has all the stuff right there about them. And this is like a nice little summary about their school, but like you definitely have to go in depth and actually research, but this at least gives you a good idea where to start with your schools besides pre-dental and like doing every like shadowing. And honestly, you just have to make sure that you really stand out, because there's applicants from literally all over the world applying to U.S. dental schools because the U.S. just has really good dental programs, and so that's why they're applying from all over the world to come here.
Yeah, the barrier of entry is really steep, you know, but if it's something you're passionate about, if you love the intersection of science, of healthcare and helping other people, and of technology and artistry, working with your hands, if those things apply to you, then it's probably a really good bet that you'd be a good fit for dentistry.
Yeah, well, sweet. Yeah, I don't have anything else unless you have any other questions or like thoughts that you wanted to share, Kenan.
I think that's most of what I had, but I guess I'll, you know, kind of wrap up with this. If anybody has any questions or comments, feel free to let us know in the comment section below, and we'll see if we can't answer some of those questions and kind of give the next generation, you know, a hand up in navigating this process and hopefully being as successful or more successful than we were, which is what we want to see, you know, good, competent contemporaries in dentistry.
Yeah, and thanks for all those that took the time to watch. We appreciate it. We hope to continue to maybe make some more videos, maybe even when we're busy with dental school. But keep your eyes out, and we'll for sure make some more podcasts before we start dental school. So thanks for watching, and take care. Talk to you later.